10 years ago, it was released.
This is really not a political issue so much as a moral issue. Temperature increases are taking place all over the world.
It was a film that certainly supercharged the conversation, or was it more the heated debate around climate change and what to do about it? Well, where are we 10 years down the track? The former Vice President Al Gore is back in Australia, and he has a sequel, an inconvenient sequel, he calls it. In it, he says that, yes, a lot of the benchmarks that we feared 10 years ago have come to pass. There are greater storms and greater extreme weather events. But he also says that there is a cause to be optimistic around the progress that we've made too, particularly when it comes to renewable energies, another area that, of course, is highly contentious in lots of ways. I caught up with Al Gore yesterday and talked to him about the sequel, about where we are with the politics of climate change, and indeed how he responded to the images of the current president, Donald Trump, at the G20 meeting, talking with other world leaders and being essentially isolated when it came to the topic of climate change.
It's impressive to me that the other 19 nations there, including Australia, stood firmly behind the Paris Agreement. And against that backdrop, in the U.S., the governors of states, the mayors of cities, the leaders of businesses have said, we're going to meet our commitments under Paris in spite of what Donald Trump says. And the new evidence shows that the U.S. is likely to meet or exceed the commitments made by former President Obama. So I'm encouraged.
Okay. So what does that mean, though, for the decision that we saw back at the beginning of June that he wouldn't sign the agreement?
Well, I was worried when he made that announcement. Indeed, I did everything I could to try and persuade him to stay in the Paris Agreement.
You went and met him.
I did, and talked with him several times. But he made the announcement he did. First, let me point out that under the terms of the agreement, he cannot withdraw until the day after the next election. And then if someone else is elected, they can rejoin on 30 days' notice. But more importantly, the new economic reality with the sharply declining cost of electricity from renewables, batteries coming down in cost, efficiency coming down in cost, we're on track to meet or exceed the Paris commitments. It would be better if we had a president who would lead the way and make even faster progress. But Donald Trump cannot stop the Paris Agreement and will not.
An inconvenient sequel has a tone of optimism in it. There is a sense of hope amongst it 10 years after an inconvenient truth. And yet, whenever we receive news about what's happening to the climate, it is invariably negative. We're seeing shrinking ice caps. We're seeing rising sea levels, rising faster than we were told they were probably going to. The news seems to be bad. And yet, you claim that there is an optimism. Why so?
Well, regrettably, some damage has been done, and more will be. But the catastrophic damage that threatens the future of human civilization can still be prevented. And there are two things different now compared to a decade ago. Number one, the climate-related extreme weather events have become far more numerous and far more destructive, which is deeply unfortunate, but it has awakened people all over the world, even those who might not use the phrase global warming. Secondly, there has been a historic decline in the cost of energy from alternative sources and the other improvements I mentioned a moment ago. We now have the means to solve the climate crisis. There is a remaining question of whether we will solve it in time, but I am optimistic because I see the progress improving every day.
You talk about energy solutions and renewable energy. It's a debate that we're having a lot here in Australia. In fact, it's ahead of the news this week, South Australia. The claims are that renewable energy just doesn't give the base load support that a grid like Australia needs. What's your response to that?
Well, first of all, the addition of batteries makes it possible to use wind energy at times when the wind isn't blowing and use solar energy during the night when the sun isn't shining. And you mentioned South Australia. South Australia, as you know better than I, is now leading the world, installing the largest battery ever installed anywhere in the world. It's the first of many to
Although
come.
There's a lot of opposition to that.
Well, we're in a transition period, but the direction of travel is very clear. It's happening all over the world. China and India are closing hundreds of coal-fired generating plants. They've signaled they're sharply reducing their purchases of coal. They've closed their own coal mines in large numbers. And we're seeing the rapid increase, particularly in solar farms, because the cost is now in many regions of the world, growing every day, lower than the cost of electricity from fossil fuels. In many cases, less than half the cost of electricity from burning coal.
Al Gore is with us this morning, and he is promoting his latest film, An Inconvenient Sequel, which is the follow-up to An Inconvenient Truth 10 years ago. In terms of how we've dealt with what you call a climate crisis, it's been so heavily politicised in that past 10 years, and it's become such an adversarial conversation, almost religious to some people. Why and how did it get to that stage that we can't talk about it rationally or haven't been able to in the way that we should have been able to?
Well, in my native state of Tennessee in the American South, there's an old saying that if you see a turtle on top of a fence post, you can be pretty sure it didn't get there by itself. And when you see high levels of climate denial, you can reach the same conclusion. In fact, the large carbon polluters have poured billions of dollars hiring the same PR firms that the tobacco company used when they hired actors and dressed them up as doctors and gave them scripts to say there are no health problems that emanate from smoking cigarettes. But they're losing this battle. People are awakening to the reality of the crisis, and they're awakening to the availability of the alternative solutions.
How close are we to the tipping point where we won't be able to reverse the damage?
Well, the scientists debate that. Some tipping points have been crossed, but not ones that threaten the existence of humanity. For example, a huge ice shelf is about to break off of Antarctica at any time, and part of the large West Antarctic ice shelf has reached a point of no return. So there will be a retreat from some low-lying coastal areas. You're already seeing some homes threatened here in Sydney from sea level rise and storm surge. In my country, the city of Miami is one of many that are threatened. So the tipping point phrase is one that's sometimes used to describe the fears that it could be a runaway scenario where we could never regain control of it. And the scientists don't know how far we might be from something like that. For example, the massive release of global warming pollution from the frozen Arctic tundra. But the vast majority of scientists are confident that we still have time to avoid those catastrophic consequences if we get busy and implement the Paris Agreement and go further still.
I notice that your film is up against the emoji film in its release date in the States. Perhaps a current metaphor? Do you think it'll do well?
Well, I'm just glad we're not up against Wonder Woman.
Al Gore, thanks very much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
It is right to save humanity. It is wrong to pollute this earth. It is right to give hope to the future generation. Don't let anybody tell you that we're going to get on rocket ships and live on Mars. This is our home.
Former US Vice President Al Gore, and yes, a little from the sequel to An Inconvenient Truth, An Inconvenient Sequel, which opens in cinemas later this month.